Hey Earl, want some of your daughter's zombie takeout? They come in four flavors: banana, peach, mint, and of course, cherry.
What's up? Welcome to episode 307 of Zombie Takeout, the B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listeners submitted. First off, one that I've been forgetting for at least last week and maybe a week or two before then. I think maybe I should have mentioned this in the last episode of last year. We were talking about whether Excelsior, the ship in Star Trek, was named for Stan Lee's catchphrase. It turns out that Marvel did a, thanks to Bodo Winter for letting me know about this, Marvel did a Star Trek The Motion Picture comic.
Why?
So it was a Marvel comic before there was an Excelsior.
Did they break it up into issues?
I don't know. He just sent me the cover of one of them. Or he just sent us over Twitter the cover of one of them.
How many issues before they finally made it onto the Enterprise is the important question.
Oh, that's a good point. All I know is I've seen the cover of one of them.
I'm reading this comic book about them going into space, but they haven't even gotten on the ship yet.
So it's entirely possible that Excelsior, the ship, was named after Stan Lee's catchphrase.
Okay.
And also, Bodo sent us a voicemail about the Moral Panic movie we asked about last time.
Howdy, Boto here. That Moral Panic movie? Oh, that's rough. Reefer Madness, you're going to hate that one. Well, unless you reefer before you watch the madness. Anyway, I came up with two. This is really rough. Either that or I'm getting older and can't remember crap. Night of the Demons, that 1988 film. There was a scene about an old man with apples and razor blades. I don't know if that was the majority of the movie or not. I just can't remember. And I can't find it to watch it again. But I know 8mm would be a good one also. 1999 film about snuff films. I know that caused a moral panic back in the day. That everybody thought snuff films actually existed. Or did they? So that might be an option for you. Reefer Madness? Oh, God. I feel sorry for you guys. Anyway, great job on the last episode. Have a great day. Bye.
So I vaguely remember seeing trailers for Night of the Comet. I don't think it was really mostly about the razor blade thing. I think that might just have been a scene they threw in because it was a fear at the time.
You've gone back and forth between Night of the Comet and Night of the Demons.
Oh, I am saying Night of the Comet. I'm sorry. It is Night of the Demon. That I don't know.
I think I've seen that. Long, long ago, I'm trying to remember. Is that a Dario Argento movie?
I don't know offhand. I actually don't know that I've ever heard about it. I think I've actually read Night of the Comet every time I've looked at this. Because I vaguely remember Night of the Comet.
Joe Augustin and Kevin Tenney. I could have sworn I've seen this one. But then again, they all kind of blend together back in the 80s.
And 8mm does fit the bill. Snuff films are kind of a moral panic thing. But do we want to subject ourselves to a Cage movie?
Well, that and a snuff film movie. I don't know.
Yeah, on top of it all, yeah. it's a good suggestion. It's a solid suggestion for the third of the trilogy. We'll keep it in mind if we can't come up with a better one.
Because, I mean, to me, Human Centipede is a moral panic movie.
Oh, I won't watch Human Centipede. Just reading the description on Wikipedia freaked me out.
The moral panic is that the movie got made and there's sequels.
Yeah. So, again, thanks for the suggestions, Bodo. Moving on to this week's movie, which is from 1981, Neighbors. This is part of a two-parter with last week's movie, The Burbs, because they're very similar movies.
It's kind of weird, yeah.
Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Motivation. It's why your characters do things. Try some in your next movie, please.
If there is a next movie.
Hmm.
Oh, anyway, also brought to you by old-timey film scores, because it's much better than having a guy just standing there and shouting, "This is weird!"
It's kind of the same thing, actually.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Oh, all right, so we have another cul-de-sac. We have...
an odd-looking cul-de-sac.
Only this cul-de-sac, there are only two houses on it. Because the difference between burbs in the early 80s and late 70s versus burbs in the late 80s
mm-hmm.
were that there are a lot of holes in neighborhoods.
And this cul-de-sac looked like it was more on a circle or roundabout, as they say in the UK, than most on a cul-de-sac.
Most cul-de-sacs are.
But there was like an island in the middle. You know, I live on a cul-de-sac at the moment. There's no island in the middle.
Some of them have that, yeah.
Oh, okay, I've never seen it.
You know what? It might be something more common out here in the Midwest, which is probably where this movie was supposed to have taken place, because I'm guessing they're talking about commuting into Chicago. All right, so they're on this cul-de-sac, only there's one house that has anybody living in it, and the other's been abandoned for about 6 months, I think they said.
Yeah.
So this couple moves in quite suddenly. And, of course, there's the same panic that there was in the Burbs movie from last week of there's somebody in that house and no, you know, concerned neighbor talk and all that sort of thing. But, of course, there's more isolation in this. And there's this weird sense that something supernatural is going to happen.
Yeah, there's a weird sort of fantasy sci-fi angle that they don't really deliver on.
Right. I've never seen a movie do this before. They make it look like there is going to be some strange supernatural, you know, phenomenon going on. And really, it's just the neighbors are kind of drifter freeloader types and, you know, carefree spirits. And, well, they pretty much turn the staid suburban couples lives upside down, and you know the wife seduces Earl in a way you could kind of see Vic seducing Earl for in a different way.
Yeah.
And eventually it everything is of course upside down, and relationships are destroyed, and of course this is a comedy.
Wow.
But yeah, it reminded me a lot of Edward Albee's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, where, you know, you have the older married couple and the younger couple meeting together and just everything going to shit like this. After a whole bunch of shenanigans that don't entirely make sense, you know, being locked in the basement, Earl goes from our staid, you know, husband, suburban husband, goes from total adoration to distrust and back to adoration very quickly.
Yeah, oddly too.
And well, their lives are changed pretty much forever. I guess you could just say hilarity ensues.
And the opening credits in this movie, just to start at the very beginning.
Could that have been my worst impromptu plot summary ever? I don't know.
It kind of fits the movie.
Well, yeah, that's the point. There really is not much of a plot here.
No. And just rolling it back to the opening credits, just right at the very beginning, they almost seemed kind of quaint and antique because they're so early 80s. The font and the music and everything.
Well, the music is practically 60s to even earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Say the score in this movie would easily be at home in a 1940s film, aside from, of course, references from, you know, later pop culture.
Twilight Zone, most obviously.
And, you know, this movie came out like 81, 82.
Wait, isn't that right about when the Twilight Zone movie came out?
It was pretty close to that, actually. But, I mean, I was, what, 8 or 9 years old? I remember this ad campaign because it was just the Twilight Zone theme for the entire...
Ah, okay.
The actual Twilight Zone theme through the entire commercial. And them kind of just looking strangely at each other. So we're neighbors, huh? You know, kind of thing. And it was just kind of like, what the hell is this?
Now, a bit of trivia. The production of Neighbors was troubled. Belushi and Aykroyd switched their roles in pre-production, acting against type. Belushi and Aykroyd also argued constantly with the director, who they believed had no understanding of comedy, and they lobbied to have him removed from the picture. They either wanted to take over directing themselves or bring in John Landis.
You know, I don't know if they were wrong or right, but there's one thing I will say, and it's in my notes early on. So far, the only strange thing here is Belushi playing the straight man.
I kind of liked it, though.
But yeah, you know, it was gutsy and it was cool.
And, you know, he's holding back all of the energy that he normally has, and it really made him very charismatic.
Right.
He was just fun to watch playing this perfectly straight character.
You really felt for him, too. Like, man, he's like...
Well, I would have felt for him if it weren't for some of the decisions he made.
Of course he made bad decisions, but you still feel for him because he's, you know, he didn't expect any of this shit to happen.
Thing is, I felt for him despite his bad decisions. I did. You're right. I did feel for him. And I utterly hated everybody else in the movie.
Well, right. Because they were all ganging up on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The sense of unfairness that you're watching him against all three of them in his own home, pretty much.
Yeah. And getting back to my sponsor, I just don't understand why any of them did anything except for Earl, Belushi's character. And in his case, you know, I understand a few things.
I don't understand why he did half the things he did.
Well, a few things he did go a little excessive with, but his general need to keep everything ordered, I totally understood.
But then things like running out to meet Ramona in the middle of the night, like, why would you trust her after all of those other things that have happened up until then? Like, wow, that's pretty stupid.
They just kind of plugged in the seduced husband storyline where it didn't really fit and didn't really back it up with anything.
Well, it could have fit, but it just didn't seem like it seemed like he lost interest somewhere along the way too.
And then gained it again and then lost it again. Like he kept giving Vic endless chances, even though he'd screwed him over how many times.
I'm trying to remember. Oh no, he gave him his car after he was suspicious of him stealing his checkbook.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some sort of apology or show of affection, and then he accused him of stealing his checkbook. It was like
he's kind of like trying to constantly appease them despite his better judgment, which I could see being a character motivation, but they don't really play it that way. He's just constantly taking these weird about faces.
And then the end, his last turn was just like, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it made no sense.
No.
Now, as odd as it was to see Belushi playing against type, it kind of felt okay to see Aykroyd playing against type. I guess maybe because he's done more buffoonish things since then.
Well, like I said before we started, this is very similar to the wild and crazy guy character.
Yeah, true.
With Steve Martin, only of course he didn't have the accent, and he was the lead rather than Steve Martin.
Right.
He's kind of the sidekick in that skit.
Mm.
But it really was a gutsy move.
Mm.
It's kind of crazy to just switch before production.
Well, I don't think it was their decision. I think it was probably the director telling them to do that.
I doubt that. I think they probably were they were probably casts, and the production company probably wanted them in their typical roles, because that would sell this film.
Oh, no, it said they switched their roles in pre-production. Okay. I was just rereading the trivia. So, yeah, maybe it was their idea.
The other weird thing is, this is, right after Blues Brothers. This is their follow-up to Blues Brothers, which was such a ginormous movie in every way. Right. I mean, from length to
production,
budget effects and everything, and guest stars. I mean, this had young Tim Kazurinsky.
Tim Kazurinsky.
I mean, Has Tim Kazurinsky ever been young?
Who is Tim Kazurinsky? I'm trying to place him.
He was the tow truck guy.
Oh, okay.
The older tow truck guy. Okay, I saw on IMDb, his quote-unquote son is actually 2 years younger than him.
Oh, God.
But Tim Kazurinsky always had, you know, that whole old man voice down and everything. Uh-huh. Just... This is before his stint on SNL, too, I think. So, he had to have been, like, crazy young here.
Right.
But he's the old man.
I knew that something felt odd about that character.
Well, first I thought it was, that SNL guy from the older cast. I can't remember. Name escapes me, the glasses. Like Buck Henry.
Yeah.
At first I thought it was him. I'm like, no. Tim fucking Kazurinsky.
Another thing that seemed odd was, Belushi and Aykroyd's first scene together when they're talking about, you know, getting food. There was just something about it that made them seem like student actors.
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind that through most of this movie, just about everyone was fucking high as
oh, yeah.
Could be.
But you know how student actors tend to do that thing where they over-enunciate their dialogue? They were doing that.
This just was such a train wreck for most of it.
Yeah. Like,
it was so cobbled together and, well, coked up.
And speaking of, you know, questioning their motivation, why did he, Earl, Belushi's character, give in to the wife's, Ramona's, blackmailing when admitting it just would have been cheaper? It would have been cheaper just to pay for the car.
Of course. I mean, that none of that made any sense. Or why he, like, was moving the car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the first place.
Well, he thought that Rick was stealing his car. So he went over and decided, even though the car was right there at Vic's house, he decided to take Vic's truck and push it into a swamp.
Well, I think
the swamp was a mistake. I think he just meant to push it away.
He wanted to, like, move it away.
Mm-hmm.
Why, I'm not sure. And if he saw his car right across... of course, that's the other thing. If you're going to pull a stunt like, oh, I'm going to, you know, cook food for everybody really quickly and then come back, which, I mean, I don't know how fast you can actually make that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't park the car in front of the house. Yeah, no. You can see it.
And speaking of the swamp, that and the whole, you know, radioactive dog and the tower behind them that was kind of just lighting everything up. I wasn't expecting them, so they were a nice twist. I really don't know how I feel about them, though.
They really serve no purpose except to throw a visual effect into the movie.
No.
A sight gag of a dog amped up.
Yeah. And a quicksand scene that made no sense, because isn't that typically associated with the desert?
You know, we did have some quicksand in our neighborhood, actually.
Oh, okay.
My brother actually sunk into some, but you know, of course he got out.
Oh, yeah. It's not as dangerous as most people think it is. You have way more time than, you know, the movies would lead you to believe.
He did need help from his friends to get him out, though.
But again, they just didn't pay off. There was really no need for that angle, you know, the swamp and the tower and all of that.
The swamp, I guess, was just, I mean, you could say it was a metaphor. You could say it was a device to, you know, sink the car into. Yeah.
And they were also kind of skirting this environmental message that, again, they tried with one line and then never revisited.
Well, yeah. The thing with the tower, it just, I mean, yeah, I guess that's what they're saying. It's just a cluelessness about your own environment and living near those power lines. Yeah. But so many people live near power lines like that. It's kind of like, I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't think that's funny.
Yeah. It seemed an odd thing to be getting upset about or making a big deal about. You know, now, but maybe it was more of a thing then, but they're just power lines. They've been around for a long time. It's not like a nuclear power or something that was unusual at the time.
Well, right. They were treating electrical power lines like it was a nuclear power plant.
Yeah.
That was kind of the other puzzling thing about it. Like, you know. I mean, yeah, long-term health effects, I'm not sure about.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, you're not going to glow from it.
Now, this was based on a novel of the same name by Thomas Berger, though it does take a lot of liberties with Berger's story and features a more upbeat ending.
Well, from what I see, they completely improvise.
Yeah. That ending was just for the movie. I think in the book he dies.
Wow.
I think I remember reading that. Also, the screenplay of the film is officially credited to Larry Gelbart, who is famous for creating MASH. Although it was extensively rewritten to Gelbart's public disapproval.
And who could blame him? This is a mess. This is a big mess.
And it was Belushi's last film performance.
And because, obviously, they were all just coked up.
Well, yeah, that affected the performance, I think. But there's a lot more wrong with this movie.
I think a lot of the decision making and
okay,
and
fair point.
Into this. I mean, if they're improvising on the fly and they're coked up while they're improvising, I'm sure some of it can turn out well. But to keep a coherent movie together, I mean, if you're doing something more abstract, I think that would work.
Yeah.
But to do an Edward Albee kind of piece, even if it is a lighter version of it. And a more carefree version of it. They're kind of celebrating the destruction of the couple as opposed to, you know, mourning it.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, on the positive side, again, I liked Belushi's performance. I also like that it all took place within 24 hours.
Well, yeah, all that aside, this still had a lot of entertainment to it. I mean, the pacing is pretty slow.
Yeah, it never really felt like it got going.
But there are so many very weird and fascinating things just thrown in there that you're like, wait, what?
Weird, I'll give you. I never even cracked a smile, let alone laughed.
I'm trying to think about it, how it works as a comedy, actually. Because, you know, that I'm not even saying.
For me, it was really just watching a very slow train wreck.
There's so many, like, weird things in the background. Like, what was the obsession with German World War things?
Oh yeah, Vic has this obsession with I would say the Nazis. Picks up a book with a swastika on it, although that was in Earl's house.
Exactly. That wasn't in Vic's house, that was in Earl's
house. And his remote control plane that he crashes at one point in the movie has an Iron Cross on it.
Yeah, it was pretty much the Red Baron
plane. Yeah. But yeah, that was in Earl's house.
Right. If the Nazi book was in Vic's house, okay, you could pull it off on Vic. Although, does Vic really seem like a Nazi type?
No.
You know, he seems very, like they seem more like they're into anarchy.
The opposite. I mean, they were blasting California Uber Alice with the daughter.
Well, right. Which wasn't on the official soundtrack in the credits, actually.
And incidentally, Belushi wanted a song by Fear to be used at the end of the movie.
Yeah, after seeing the movie and going online and looking at stuff, and the thing Belushi hated most about this movie, and I'm right there with him, was the fucking Bert Conti score.
Bill Conti.
Philip Conti, which was a fucking nails on a chalkboard. I mean, the John Williams score 1941 made sense because it was World War II when they were in it. But a score like that in this, where it's all, hey, this is an upbeat, weird party kind of thing. And then the weird sci-fi element, like, ooh, Twilight Zone, scary. It just added to the what-the-fuck factor of this movie.
Yeah, it did stick out a bit. It didn't bother me as much as it did you, but it definitely didn't seem to fit. You know, my attitude towards scores is if I notice it, there's a problem. And I noticed it this time.
Exactly. Well, because it screamed.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just a subtle thing. It was just I mean, It blasted. I mean, it was kind of annoying in the burbs too, actually, that sound that's were there when they're doing like the stuff from the Patton movie for Vietnam vet and the and just the such on the nose thing. But this was just amped up so many more notches above that that it was like that, they weren't really doing that in 1981. Really. No, no. But yeah, it was this guy got brought in to redo it. There was a different score before this. And yeah, this guy, I guess he was friends with Conti and brought him in to redo it. It didn't work well with test audiences, I think they'd said.
Okay. So test audiences and rewrites, the usual culprits.
Yeah. Anytime you hear those things, it's like, oof. Yeah. So I think there's a version out there with the original score. Who knows what that sounds like? Yeah.
I don't think it's worth bothering. I don't think a score could help it much.
I mean, I'd watch this again in the future just to like try to catch more crazy shit in the background that Bellucci and Aykroyd just planted. Because, I mean, you know that Nazi book was just there for their fucking amusement.
Right, yeah. Probably.
Like, it has nothing to do. Like, at first, you're wondering, are they doing these things as, like, a character statement or anything? And after a while, when you're watching it, you realize, no, they were bored. They were
probably
yacked to hell. And, they just they
decided to amuse themselves.
Yeah, they hated this director. So I don't know who was wrong and who was right, honestly, the argument of the director.
Oh, I just think it was all just a big, slow train wreck.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, without a doubt, it is a train wreck. It still has that some entertainment value to it, even though it's slowly paced and misleadingly paced, too. But once you go in not knowing it's a sci-fi film or a horror film, I think it, that will do it a lot better.
On to sequels and remakes?
Well, I think we did one last week, didn't we?
Well, I reserved judgment last week because I wanted to see this first. And having seen both, I would rather see a remake of The Burbs. I think that would be a better movie. Again, fixing a lot of the issues with The Burbs. Maybe changing the ending. Maybe ending it with his rant.
It's very strange. They both have kind of the same message about who is the weird person. The person who lives in society with everybody else, or the person that locks themselves away in this made-up, fake, you know, environment of the suburbs. And in this, it's a little weirder because it's actually even more claustrophobic than The Burbs was.
And maybe that's why cul-de-sac looked so weird, because it did look very isolated. It's just two houses on this roundabout.
I can't even imagine living like that, where just you and another person on the cul-de-sac. Because usually if there's a cul-de-sac there, they're building those houses immediately.
Right, and it's aligned with houses all the way.
Yeah.
On to Brains?
On to Brains.
I liked Belushi's performance. I liked that it all took place within 24 hours. That's it. I'm going one.
I like this better than The Burbs. There was a lot more, a lot more interesting performances, at least. The Burbs was way too institutional cooking for my taste, whereas this was just complete gonzo filmmaking. It is a train wreck, but I'm not going to recommend it. I'm going to say it's 2.5.
All right, and what have we learned?
Cocaine's one hell of a drug, with the great Rick James.
And I learned that sometimes the copy is better than the original. I still preferred The Burbs.
I mean, I don't know how much of a copy they were. I think because the stories are so different. But I guess with all the jokes I've said, I should, add the fact that this was Bellucci's last film.
Yeah, I mentioned that earlier, and it's kind of a shame.
Like, he passed away,
I think, 4 months?
Yeah, 4 months after this was released. And
two and a half months.
They even say that this movie actually led to that because he had sobered up. He had cleaned up.
Right, right. I remember reading this. for his previous movie, which I can't remember the name of.
That was the one with Mindy.
Okay. Continental Divide, was it?
Yeah, and I, for some reason I thought that came out after this one, but I think he actually filmed that one first, and then, yeah, he fell back into it because the entire crew and cast were using.
All right, so until next time when we'll finally be reviewing 50 Shades of Grey. Can't think of anything that'll put it off more.
Are you sure we can't make a trilogy out of this? I mean, it has to be some other fucking cul-de-sac suburban movie.
I think we just should get it over with. We've got some good stuff coming after it. Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Also, if you enjoyed the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. I was saying it was up through Johnny Mnemonic, but I think there are a couple after that that we've added.
Okay.
I can't think of what they are offhand.
Well, I mean, we're looking for that Moral Panic trilogy.
Well, yeah, I think we threw in those, we definitely threw in Mazes and Monsters, yeah.
I'm trying to figure out how long do I have to wait to see Mazes and Monsters, because that's going to be fucking great.
If we want to commit to 8mm, we can do it, you know, in a few weeks, I suppose. There's a few things I'd like to get to first, but
yeah,
particularly in Nukem High.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Bad, too.
Mm-hmm. You also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. And, of course, the recommendations list. I was kind of hopeful going in because I remembered liking what I knew about this movie.
Yeah, it's funny. I have, like, both impressions I've had of each film pretty much came back to me in the middle of it. Like, I remember this being, like, really, like, I don't think I made it through much of this one either. I think I'd probably tuned out somewhere in, like, going, this is just boring.
I have I have kind of a mashed up memory of both of them that I don't know what is from what. I mean, before I saw them, you know, now, obviously, I remember them both pretty well.
I think I tuned in to this one, you know, as a kid, hoping to see crazy John Belushi.
Right.
I'm just disappointed to not see that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you understand now why he was trying to move away from that.
Mm-hmm. And at least on his part, it was a good idea. It's just the rest of it that was an issue.
Oh, I think so. But, I mean, the thing was, nobody knew what they were making.
Right. Yeah, I think so.
They thought they were making a comedy. I think the director thought they were making something else. And
Thought they were making a sci-fi movie.
Someone thought they were making a sci-fi movie, which is really weird. There's nothing Twilight Zone about a dude who's like, oh, okay, I'm going to take your money that I thought it was going to take out and make dinner for you. It's sad.
Uh-huh. Of course, you can email us at zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1 or for the alphanumerically challenged.
You could go fuck yourself.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
Whatever I get, Earl, I first have to get going.
It is Night of the Demons.
Night of the Comet's a zombie movie, kind of.
Okay, yeah.
If I remember right.
Just a little, you know, how the sausage is made. I'm reading what Bodo said. I edit the voicemail in after, so I'm guessing you're reading the email too.
No one said there'd be sausage.
Or not the email, the transcription. I misspoke completely when we were talking about it.